The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful, sunny, sometimes blustery Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack for another edition of The Interview. It is the main portion of the Knapsack Files. It's the meat and potatoes of the podcast feed here. Thank you all for joining us. And I'm very happy to have a guest on that I'm very aware that I'm introducing to the audience at large because he is such a behind-the-scenes guy. But if you've been following me since, the Screen Junkies days, and you were an early member of Screen Junkies Plus, and you were a fan of the Nick Mundy show, Monday Night Raw, and if you still watch Movie Fights and a lot of stuff on Screen Junkies, you hear this name every now and then, and that is the cameraman Handsome. So I have today Handsome Ryan Elliott.
That is the nickname I've been given.
Yeah. I can pull some curtains back here. You got this look like, why am I here?
I kind of do, and I am so behind the scenes that, like, I'm like, why do you want to talk to me? Like, what do I got? Like, but I'm here for any story, anything you want.
Yeah, it's because you are a fascinating cat man. That is why. Because you showed up in the early days of Screen Junkies Plus. Now, digital media is still forming its spine. It's still forming its structure. It's still finding itself. But Screen Junkies Plus, a fully on-demand, paywall subscription-based service, was not new at all. But it was an experiment that is still going, and it sometimes struggles and it sometimes succeeds. And I was there to help launch it. And digital media has kind of this thing of, let's just throw up some cameras and put four people at a table and we'll talk about things and that'll be it. And that's what I was used to. Well, we brought in a couple cameramen and that's what they did. They set up the cameras and they sat there and they did nothing. They were on the phone. And then we brought in you.
Yeah.
And you changed the game.
I like to think so.
You have a lot of camera experience. You've worked for a lot of places, as a lot of cameramen do. Mm-hmm. And immediately, not just your work ethic, but the way you controlled the camera, moving in on shots. Let's do here. You started to up the game. You don't get the credit, and that's why I wanted you here today. That's the end of the show. No.
No.
What did you think? This is my starting point with you. What did you think? How much digital media had you done that first day you walked into Screen Junkies?
So when I first started, I probably never even watched a panel show.
Right.
I don't do YouTube stuff that often. Like, maybe if I'm building something.
I'm not even sure you do the internet.
I don't really do the internet that much.
That's why I love you.
So, like, I wasn't familiar with really the format, anything. I do have more television experience. And so I got a call from old producer there, Jawan.
Mm-hmm. Jawan Guillory, who's been on the Knapsack Files.
Yeah, big name around. Mm-hmm. Around Screen Junkies then.
Big wheel down at the Cracker Factory.
Yeah, so like I came in and like you guys just got like the week after I started the new studio for Screen Junkies.
Oh, yeah.
It was the Screen Junkie Plus, the new Movie Fight stage where they were doing it on a different.
Because I first worked with you on the old Movie Fight stage.
I came in for the first like honest commentary and I set up a couple shots and I was like, okay, now what do I do? I'm like, this is a cool place. How do I get involved here? Mm-hmm. And the job itself they want me to do is kind of just babysitting. Like, it's not that exciting.
Set up six cameras and we'll see you in an hour.
See it, yeah. And then the constant thing was like, oh, it's good. It's good enough. Let's do it. Let's go. And I don't like that. So when I got over to this new stage, our new studio, the Movie Fight Studio now, and it was a clusterfuck. It was just... I'm very particular on how things are set up how things are ran, and it was a clusterfuck.
And part of the problem is you have me and JTE setting up how to do things, Josh Tapia. And absolutely. I look at my desk now. We're here at the Collider offices. It is a cluttered mess.
Yeah.
JTE, he barely gets a shirt on himself in the morning and a hat on, and you're stuck with us. A lot of people coming in and out of the studio. So you're just talking even. It was too messy.
It was too messy.
We're starting from there.
I'm starting there. I walk in. There's cables on the ground. How I don't like how cables are. And there's things. So I just like. It's in me just to fix it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to wait for someone to ask me to do something. I'm not going to do anything. Yes. It was just like I just started doing stuff because it needed to be done.
Right.
And if I'm like, all right, if you're paying me for a day, I'm gonna work. I'm gonna do something. Like your show's not for a couple hours. I'm gonna fix this. I'm gonna fix that. And I didn't even know what my place was there. You know, I just kind of started. I met this guy named Ken. He's the boss. JT's my boss. Juwan's the boss. Andy's my. I don't know who is actually in charge
of
me.
Who you taking orders
Who'd
from?
Who'd ask? So you know, you were in the studio. I'd be like, Ken, can I fix that? And you're like, what? That? What's wrong with it? I don't know. I don't like it. I'm gonna fix. You're like, do it. Do whatever you want. And that's just how I kind of got in there, I guess, is I just did what I wanted.
You ended up making the job you wanted.
Yeah.
You know? And that is an interesting, it's not just work ethic, it's a work approach. Have you just always been like that?
I guess so. I mean, I started working when I was like 13.
Doing what? At the sawmill?
No, construction, kind of. My dad owned a cabinet business.
Okay.
And so on the summers, he had an old friend it was a bigger company who would install cabinets in schools. And so he would bring me, he asked if I wanted to work. I was getting $10 an hour at 13? So my freshman, eighth grade, freshman year, whatever age
you're rolling in it.
So I did that for 3 summers in a row.
Yeah.
We would go out of town on Monday, come back Friday night. We were going to Humboldt County. We'd go down to San Francisco. And so I just 10-hour days.
And you're a NorCal kid?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Northern California, Redding, which is like 2 hours from Sacramento.
Yeah.
Great meth up there here. I don't know.
That makes some sense, too, because a lot of times things would break at the Screen Junkies studio, and I imagine it's still the case.
Yeah.
Be like, Ryan, can you fix this?
Yeah, it's so... I love projects. That's I'm just addicted to projects. I have to have something to be working on. And the place was filled with projects and nobody told me no.
Yeah.
So I just kept doing it.
And it was when I say earlier, and this is for all the kids taking notes at home who want different careers in Hollywood. When I say, you know, you made the job you wanted, it wasn't like you showed up and were like, I want to work here 5 days a week, but you saw an opportunity. But it was like up until then, like you were a cameraman and we were bringing in, you were one of 5 camera guys.
Yeah.
But not only are you just a sweetheart of a guy and you fit in well with JT and I, but it was like one day you show up and like now the cables are hung that were on the ground. And the next day, like this corner's organized. And the next day it was like, this Ryan guy, he's not just flashing cameras at people. He's bringing something to the table.
Well, I had to bring that studio up to a professional level. The things that they wanted to do, the Screen Junkie Plus, it needed to be a functional studio.
Yeah.
It's not a once a week we get used. It's twice a day. It's sometimes more. It's some, you know.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes
so
all day.
So much happens out of this one studio. So when something happens, you need to know where to get the part you need. You need it to be organized. If you want things, and if you only want one guy running it, you better do it right, I guess. Like,
or me screaming for a pen 2 seconds before movie fight starts for a guest.
All of that stuff. And it was all
water.
Like, it all came from like, okay, one day somebody asked for a pen. I don't have any pens. Next day, go find where they keep the pens. Now I have a stack of them. You'll never not have a pen.
Yeah.
And it's just, and now, I've taken on too many jobs there. Now I do.
Well, that's the dark side of this.
Everything.
But, when was the first time ever you put a camera on your shoulder and fell in love with that? Because you're good at that.
I've been probably since, I don't know, I was like 4th grade, something like that. Like, I started with my cousin on, you know, I would meet with him. He had his, like, a Hi-8 camera. Not the film, but, you know, like, the digital Hi-8. And, like, we would make little videos, and my parents got a camcorder, and it was like, you know, if I have, like, friends staying over, like, we would make fake commercials all night. Like, that's what we would do. We'd make dumb little things. And it just grew until junior high, until high school. And I just always, that's what I would do.
The seeing things through the camera. So did you ever want to do anything else in entertainment world? You have a lot of other interests and things. But director, storyteller, actor, you're a pretty man. You didn't want to do that stuff. You just liked the camera.
I would, for the most part, you know, you'd always have to, like, act in some stuff, and I never enjoyed that part. I more enjoyed, I don't know, figuring out the story, figuring out how to, and especially back then, it was very, like, how can I make nothing something out of nothing, because it was just, we didn't have anything. It was just a camcorder and just doing dumb stuff, and then got into high school, and, you know, I would start doing, it's like, oh, teachers would be like, oh, you got to write a 5-page paper on a book. I'm like, well, can I do a video instead? And then, you know... And so, like, I got out of writing papers all through high school by, like, oh, make a video. Because they're like, and, you know, teachers want to, it's your passion. It's your, you know, do something different.
Stupid teachers.
Stupid teachers. And then they would get to a point where they're like, okay, but there has to be some, like, substance to it. You can't do it. So we even got to the point where sometimes I'd just read the book on camera and and turn it in. I would do anything I can, you know, this was before editing. You can just put your computer, like.
Right.
So we would do, like, a camcorder to a CD player to the VCR, like, play, record. Yeah. Like, it was horrible. If you look back, it's, you know.
Jump cuts galore.
Just, it's terrible. And you had to film it in order and do that kind of stuff. And I don't know. So just in high school, I started doing it for more of my church.
Yeah.
I grew up a kind of a church kid.
Yeah.
And it was a big deal in our church. It was a bigger church that they had, like, in the high school group had, like, a film, like, a media department thing. Like, go out and do funny videos, and we would do.
I was the head writer of my church's sketch group for a while.
Exactly. It's a great place to build that those kind of skills. And so I did a lot of stuff through there, and it just.
So you keep going. This is a weird statement to say, but you're a very creative guy, and I think sometimes the perception of camera guys is you're just shooting a camera. Is that wrong of me to think?
There's certainly.
I mean, I know it's not true.
Yeah,
but
there's certainly jobs out there where you point a camera and it's you know, you hold a single on a show and that's what you do.
Yeah.
And
good money, but it's what you do.
Exactly. And then there's there's so many different aspects you can be in. You could tell stories. You could do documentary. There's so many different areas, and I kind of try to do them all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I get so bored doing one thing over and over again. I've had good gigs where I'm just like, "This is mind numbing. I can't do it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did you go to study? Did you go to school for this?
I did. I went to a school in Santa Monica called the Art Institute of Santa Monica.
Sounds legit.
Now it's come out. It's kind of like a. One of those paid for profit kind of bullshit. They got me good. And
but
actually,
you learn.
You know what?
And something went right.
Out of the people, you know, I know a good number of people have come out, and a lot have not done a ton. And there's a good handful that I still know, still to this day, I still work with. And and so it's like when I first got out, I graduated like 80 grand in student loans. Like, I'm the most millennial you've ever seen. I went to art school. I followed my dream. I paid for my degree. Like, you know.
You build cupboards.
Yeah, I do all of that. So I was so pissed out of school. Like, when I first got out, I was like, man, that was the biggest scam I've ever done.
Right.
And then now I get older, you're like, well, I wouldn't have known that. But you play the hindsight game, and you're like, well, I met that person who did this, that did this.
That's the thing about you look back on the path, and we just had Rachel Cushing on last week, who's an editor, and, you know, she goes to film school and is fascinated, too, with the behind-the-scenes stuff. But then you learn this person, you get this mentor, you move to L.A. What made you – was it just – there's a leap here from Reading to Santa Monica. What made you make that decision?
So it was actually a couple guys who were, like, the older students. Like, back when I was at church, the group, there was, like, guys that were, like, 2 years older than me, and they were a lot better than me. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, the, oh, my God, if I could ever be those guys kind of a thing. And they came down and went to that school. And so then I was, like, 2 years later, when it was time for me, I was, like, all right, let's see what they're doing. So I came down, checked out the school, looked at what they were doing. I was, like, that's what I want. I wanted –
connected.
I got to be in LA. I got to be there to do it. And if this is who I've been for so long, I got to go do it.
You got to do it. You don't hesitate. You didn't hesitate. Once you locked in, you didn't hesitate.
I locked in, just came down, and I came down with one other friend who's like, he came to do the same thing. And within 2 months, he bailed on me. We had an apartment together.
Oh, no.
And he bailed. So I'm in LA 2 months in by myself. Like, oh,
right.
It got messy for a while, but.
Did you consider any other career paths, any other choices? You'd be like a fireman or a park ranger or airline pilot. What did you want to do?
You know what? When I was growing up, you asked me that. I would say I wanted to be a newsman.
Newsman.
That's how I kind of, I thought that's where I was going. I wanted to read the news.
A newsman, I say.
News, one of them
news
really?
Fellas. Really? You wanted to sit there in the suit and tie?
I that's what I thought.
I can't even possibly imagine.
Not a chance.
And for those who are listening, maybe not, you got this beard, it's well-trimmed, but long, flowing hair. You're an outdoorsman. This is a weird thing.
Yeah, I am kind of a different part of the industry. I live one life in the city and one life outside the city.
Which we're going to be talking about for sure. But yeah, newsman, huh? What about that? And I get it. I wanted to be in news for a while too, but...
That was just like when, like, in a smaller town, that's the only studio, that's the only thing being made was the news. That was the big time there. And I actually, like, in junior high, I was like, interview someone you like, you know, those things. So I went in and interviewed a news guy and, like, saw cameras for the first time, like a real studio. And it's like, oh, this is what I want to do. I didn't know I would end up being on the other side.
You want to be the anchor, but yeah.
Right. And... I guess I...
It's so true. This interesting phenomenon. I'm sure other small-town listeners out there will connect with this on that. Because for me, it was my hometown news station, KSBY, in San Luis Obispo. And there's KCOY in Santa Maria. But KSBY, it was the local celebrities. Mm-hmm. Kimberly Moss and Carolyn Johnson is actually down here in L.A. now. And these news anchors. And Rick Martell, who has since passed on, was like Kent Brockman on The Simpsons. Like, we always thought it was based on him because Groening actually had some connection to Cal Poly up in that on my hometown. And... It was the first time I got to go to a TV studio. Yeah. Wow, this is where they make stuff. And there's Rick Martell, and he doesn't have his jacket on. He's drinking a soda. Wow. And I was in high school, and I get it.
It's those celebrities there. Yeah, it's the only thing I could do there. Right. And then you go in and you see the big camera. You see the lights. You see how it's all done.
Right.
And it's so fascinating. The first time people walk in studios, it's amazing because it's... Their eyes light. There's so much foreign things around.
Yes.
And until you know what they are, it looks like you're covered in robots and stuff. It's pretty fun.
What was your first big job down in L.A.? Or what was your first job? Where do you go with this $80,000 in debt hanging over your shoulder? Where are you going to go with it? What do you do?
I was all through college. I was working at Best Buy, and I was working at Hollywood Video.
Right.
And so... When I was approaching graduation of college, I said, I'm not going to be in the same place before and after this degree.
Right.
So I quit when I graduated. I quit Best Buy with nothing. I had about enough money for about a month, two kind of a thing. And I started applying and realized my degree ain't worth anything. And nobody in this town cares at all.
It's like, where I'm from the Film Institute, Art Institute of Santa Monica.
Who are you? Go away. Like. And it is, people say, oh, this town's hard. It's like, not many people are, you know, you don't give breaks to other people because they might take your job sometime.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing to break through.
Yeah.
So I found a company that I went and applied to, and they do, I don't know, they just do a tons of court shows. They do kids shows. They do a ton of stuff. So I started with them. As a cameraman number five kind of a thing. And I think I was with them for about 5 years. And it was that first, they say in college, like, these are the people you're going to be working with. These are the who are going to be hiring. Kind of not really. This is the job. When I look back, this is the place where I've met everyone I work for and people I, like, wherever I'm working now, all got through kind of people I've met through this one location. And
you don't know that stuff at the time.
You don't. And it was terrible. It was like a sweatshop of production.
Sure.
It was our CEO called us the Walmart of production.
Oh my gosh.
Like this was his like slogan. He thought it was great, but to us it meant you're making a bunch of shit and it doesn't matter. Just it was digital fluff. Just pixels on the screen, we would capture it. But I learned so much, and I met great people and producers, and that's where I met Juwan.
Juwan Guillory
got me into Screen Junkies. It's like, it's so fun. Yeah,
You onto the Knapsack Files,
which got me here. Yeah. Now, when I look back 10 years from now, this will be the moment.
This will be the moment. And you've worked for like NFL, right?
I'm over right now with Fox Sports, so gotcha. I do a good amount. I'm a jib operator over there.
A jibby,
what jibby?
A jibby?
I don't know.
A jibby, which is good. It's easier. It looks easier than it actually is.
It's a little difficult.
Yeah.
Which is why I like it.
Yeah. And then one of the more interesting jobs that I know you've had is you got to work for the Olympics.
I did. Yeah.
For a company, but for Mr. Olympics.
Mr. Olympic called me. Yeah, no, yeah. No, I did. I got to go down to Brazil for 5 weeks this last Olympics.
Yeah.
And I worked as like a camera tech. I had, you know, for basically, I worked for OBS, who is the production company for the Olympic Channel. Yeah. And I don't want to get onto it, but there's a lot of stuff there. But yeah, that was fantastic of an opportunity.
I mean, absolutely. And I remember dreading that you were going because I was going to lose you for 5 weeks. But
you
that
begged
helped,
me not to.
Begged you not to go. I mean, though I knew, you know, watching more movie fights versus go to Brazil. But that led to R2, Ryan Elwell, joining the Screen Junkie team.
Who I used to work at that other company with, who I actually went to school with.
It's another tall, long-haired camera guy. I don't know what it is with you guys, you tall, long-haired guys. But going to Brazil... fascinating opportunity, but also, I mean, at the time it was like you didn't know if you were going to catch Zika and die. It was interesting job.
There was a lot of that Zika talk leaving, and I didn't know if I should be scared or not care, but I just couldn't not go.
Right.
Like,
there might be some syringes in the streets,
stuff
but I'm
happen.
Doing it.
I'm going. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you get that opportunity, you just got to do it. And it's like, 5 weeks was a long time to be down there.
Yeah,
it's
away from your girlfriend,
away from the lady, and away from just life, and
away from me,
away from Ken. Yeah. Like that was the hardest part. But actually, while I was down there, I had a couple night shifts where I would start at like 6 o'clock at night and go to like 3, 4 in the morning.
Right,
and that was like a shift I had. And when I started feeling lonely, and you're just like in this place, dark building, and doing this whole thing, I would put on movie fights. And I would listen. And it was kind of like I was hanging out with friends still.
That's great.
And people say that, but, you know, like, oh, you know, you guys are good friends. But, like, luckily I actually get to know everybody there.
Yeah.
So it's like I get to – I would watch Monday Night Raw, and I would get the jokes, and I knew what he was you – know, it's like it really was like a kind of a little touch of friends and family while I was
That's
out
sweet.
There.
How does it feel to be at an Olympics with the hubbub, the moving parts? There's so much going on.
It was so interesting. It's honestly, they assemble the most complicated technical system in the world.
Right.
This is, you know, it's the biggest event in the world. And to see all the parts come together and the different companies work together. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I look at everything through the tech point of view.
Sure.
But just walking around and seeing the different countries, people walking around, there's so much. Just good energy. You'd
really?
Walk down the streets. Like, yeah, there was guys with rifles hanging out there. But everyone else is just having a great time. Everyone's supporting their countries. And it's not like a weird, like, you know, USA
this, down with this.
All
but
this
just
stuff.
Like,
but even though you'd know the United States people, because the only ones that wear their flags on their pants and stuff. Everyone else has, like, a soccer jersey. And we come around, and you're like, oh, here comes the Americans. Oh, my God. Like,
got their American flag, Zubaz pants.
We love our flag. And it's so fun to talk to people from around the world and how they, like, how
really?
They view us. And that was the best part.
What's their thought? General thoughts on the flag pants?
Yeah, it's like, people are like, why are you guys so obsessed with your flag? I'm like... And when you don't think about it, you're like, yeah, I guess we do put that in a lot of places. Like,
put that everywhere.
I don't know.
Put that on hats.
That was one of my favorite parts is meeting people from all over the world. Like,
right.
Now it's like I've got friends in Spain and
Do
and
you?
India.
You stay connected, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you know, it's great with the social media, too. You just don't even have to try because I'm terrible at trying.
Right. Like, I mean, you're on Twitter, right? Kind of.
I have done one tweet.
Yeah, good. You're going to get some Twitter action after this show.
And
people
I did
are going to tweet you.
Just for Screen Junkie. I could care less about kind of doing, like, oh, I'm eating a salad, like, kind of stuff.
That's all I tweet.
Yeah.
It's what salad I'm eating.
But now, like, through Screen Junkies, it's like, because every show is like, oh, follow us on Twitter and follow the live action. I'm like, what are they talking about? And I finally, I'm like, oh, people are talking about stuff that I'm doing right now. I don't know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I kind of
you
want to
watch it.
I kind of just kind of creep on the conversation. And
on the hashtags.
Stay away from it.
When you're there at the Olympics in Brazil, I think any Olympics, there's always an, especially, you know, this modern world, and I think post Munich in 72 and definitely post 96 in Atlanta where that bomb exploded. It's a big event, but it's, you know, there's stuff in the back of your head that could go wrong. Brazil had the health situation. It sounds like once you get there, none of that's in your mind.
It's not, I mean, you definitely, they kind of run you through like some safety stuff. Like,
hey,
when you're, don't walk alone. If you're going, you know, like the general, but like treat it. I mean, we live in LA, so it's like,
if
there's places in LA, I'm going to tell tourists like, hey, you probably shouldn't go walk around there looking like an idiot. Like,
so stay out of Burbank.
Yeah. Just anywhere over the mountain. Stay away. So yeah, you are very aware that you're in a different place and that it's not your home.
And it's a world event.
Yeah, and nobody really speaks English. Like, it's not a huge English-speaking area.
Right.
So you just kind of have to be very aware. But, like, there's, I don't know, once it all started, like, you don't think about all the disease. You don't think about, I mean, there. Everybody gets a sick. They call it the Olympic sick, like, because it's just like.
I get that in Vegas. So.
Yeah, it's the same thing. When you're, you know, when you're on a plane, you know, you hear people sneeze and stuff, and you're like, oh, God.
We're all going to die.
Here it comes. But other than that.
Outbreak starts.
Yeah, other than that, like, you know, I wasn't worried about it. And that's not, I don't walk around looking for what's wrong.
Sure.
And so, yeah, you probably could get sick. You probably could get mugged, but what are you going to do?
Like, what are you going to do?
I mean, that happens everywhere.
I get it. And I, from an outside point of view, it's like, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'd want to go to that, even if someone hired me to send to the Olympics. I don't know. Then you just were like, let's do it.
Yeah.
You and our producer, Liz Bonsack, at the time, was Monday Night Raw TV Fights producer. She went as well to work on the gymnastics side of things. Is that the probably the biggest job you've been to? But in terms of locations, have you done any other wild, crazy locations in terms of work?
I've done a number of, I mean, a lot of shoots, it's like, oh, we need you to go to San Francisco, and we need you to go,
I've done
Detroit a couple times.
That's dangerous.
Where else have I, but most of
but
my...
not around the world, you're not in the Sudan.
No, not a lot of big world work, which I'm hoping this, you know, Olympics comes up again, and I can keep riding that and see where else they go, because every 2 years they have something.
Right, so you're really looking forward to the Olympics if it comes back to Los Angeles.
Kind of not really. I see that. I'm like, that'd take all the fun out of it.
Yeah.
The best part was that you're in a new place. Yeah. It's exciting. They're like, oh, I'm going to go to USC. And yeah, no, like, that's.
I want to work. I want to not sleep in my own bed when I'm working the Olympics.
Right? Like.
Totally. Totally. Do you want those kind of jobs? Do you want to take the documentary that goes into the deep jungles? Are you just happy in a nice air conditioned studio?
It's hard because it is so nice going to studio work. You walk in, your camera's sitting there, you do it, you lock off, you walk away.
There's no snake.
There's no snakes, none of that kind of stuff. But when I first got out of school, I mean, I really wanted to do National Geographic kind of stuff. Like, I really love going out and filming in location where it's like something happens, you have one chance to get it, you better do it right. Like,
When that puma strikes.
God, I love that. That's a good phrase.
Hashtag when that puma strikes.
And I would go anywhere and kind of do anything. Honestly, you pay me to go do it. I'm your man. I'll do it. I can go into natures. I can go into cities. Whatever you need done.
What is it? Is it a lack of fear? A bigger sense of adventure? Like, what drives that? I'm a scaredy cat. I wouldn't podcast in, you know, Santa Monica today.
when the camera is in my hand, the thoughts of like, it's hard because all I want to do is get the shot, get the moment, get the whatever needs to happen. And you'll find yourself like, you know, I used to do some like car shoots and stuff where you're like, all right, I'll be on the side of the road, the car zoom past me and do this kind of stuff. Or I'll hang out the back of the truck. Like, and you have to like stop later and you're like, why the hell? Actually, one time I was, it was when Michael Jackson passed away. They were doing his big funeral out of Staples Center.
Yeah.
So the company that I was with, they really wanted, we were doing a documentary on Michael Jackson. So I was up in the helicopter. Zooming around Staples Center. They didn't have the door on the helicopter.
Oh, no.
And I get in and I realize I don't have any way to secure the camera to me because I'm going to be hanging out of the window.
You drop this camera, someone's dying.
So then I had to like run to my car, get a bungee cord, strap it to the camera, strap it to my belt, and then I'm up there with 1 foot out of the helicopter with just a seatbelt basically around.
No.
And it's just a lap belt. And it was so amazing. And then I get back and I think I was telling somebody, they're like, you did what? Why would you do that?
What's the OSHA compliance
and
on
like,
that?
I was like, yeah, but it was cool. It was like, I got the shots. I got.
Right. Were you an adventurous kid? Were you the kid who jumped over the gorge with your bicycle? Where does this come from?
Yeah, I guess so. Like when we were kids, I wasn't an inside kid. It was very much like if there was sunlight out, mom would say go outside. You had to be riding your bike. You had to be
like
doing
get
something.
Out of here, kid.
And we had some fields and we have some forests and kind of stuff.
Right.
I mean, Northern California, you could be, you know, grew up camping, grew up everything.
You could play with the Ewoks.
Yeah, I was an outdoor kid. So, like, getting hurt, I was the kid, I was always bleeding from something. I was always having poison oak. I was always scraped up, and I had a blast.
And you felt okay, and you knew you could survive. See, that's a deep lesson. Last week I talked about, with Rachel Cushing, the idea of knowing that it's okay to fail and career choices, and you can always choose again. But I think you learned a valuable lesson early on, whether you knew it or not. You're going to get hurt and be okay, and you're going to fall, you're going to get okay. See, I didn't get hurt much as a kid. I didn't have poison oak, even though I did go play. My friend had.
You never had poison oak?
No, my friend had an acreage. We'd play army. We'd do campouts. I like it.
Yeah.
But I had, God bless her, an overprotective mother, and I wasn't allowed to do as many of that stuff for fear of getting hurt. So I think, and I'm not blaming mom. I want that clear.
It always comes up.
I'm not blaming mom, but I think I grew up with a sense of be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful. And yes, you should be careful. Don't hang out of helicopters.
Right. Yeah. You really
make sure you have a flimsy seatbelt. But you were learned early on. You're going to fall. You're going to get some scratches, get some bruises. But that's cool. That's all right. Next up. Yeah. You didn't even know you were learning these lessons.
I didn't. I actually, until someone points it out, I just thought I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We would build bike jumps and you would do little campouts and light fires where you're not supposed to. And
right.
I don't know.
It translates to, you know, so now someone says, hey, you want to go work for 5 weeks in Brazil, which might carry some dangers dangers you might view from the outside that aren't actually there. And they want you to do it. And you're like, that's great, an opportunity for a lifetime. And I'm like, someone's like, you want to try a new restaurant? I'm like, I don't know. I like my restaurants.
Yeah.
So
I won't know what to order.
How do you pay? I had to be dragged by Mark Ellis and Josh McCuga over to the new Chronic Taco because I was like, but I know Chipotle.
Oh, geez.
And I'm rewarded because Chronic Taco was better. But so that is something it's not there. Not that you don't have doubts or wonder if I should do this or not.
Of course, there's always those things, but it's always like, I don't say no very well. Someone's like, "Hey, come do this. We'll do that." Okay, let's do it. Like, I don't know. I guess that's just how I like to do things. Just go and give it a try.
You don't say no. That's a great topic sentence.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and not that you don't get sad and write some poems every now and then, but you generally, in the time that I've known you, I would describe you as a happy person. You can be dark and brooding. I've seen you get grumpy over cords being not folded up right.
Yeah.
JT, showing up late because he's doing a JT Movie Thinks video.
Yeah.
But are you generally a happy, content person with what you got going on?
You know, I always try to find the positive side of everything. And I've always done and I didn't even know it. You hear about The Secret where believe it and you get it, that kind of a thing. And, I've looked into a lot of that kind of stuff and I don't come from really a religious point of view anymore.
Right.
So I don't look for my comfort there.
But you were raised in the church your whole life, kind of like I was.
Yeah, I was pretty in there.
Sure. Vacation Bible schools in the summer.
All of that stuff.
Church camps. Yep,
church camps. And got it. I did a Awana. I don't know if anybody knows Awana.
I did Awanas. Yeah. I was a Spark.
See, you're a Spark. See, I know there's the Cubbies, the Sparkies, and you go to my dad was in charge of it. So
we never, this is amazing. I wouldn't think this would come up. But I am one of the only, I think I'm the only person who would know the a reference of the Awana Club.
See, there, I was in that until early high school.
You have the little purple vest?
I got vests, I got badges and medallions. And
I won a soapbox car race there with my dad made a soapbox car for me.
The little one?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so cool, yeah.
It's still at my mom and dad's house.
I think I have a couple of those too.
Yeah, and basically it's like Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts for...
It's Boy Scouts with Jesus.
Boy Scouts with Jesus.
It's really what it is. And you get to play games, you get to do all that, but you got to learn a couple Bible verses.
We have a simple background
there.
Did
we just bond?
We just bond over Awanas. That's amazing, man. So here's a dividing line is I'm a grumpy malcontent, and you are not that, which is part of the reason I think I like hanging out with you. I took you to see Force Awakens.
You did.
My friend Jessica and I went, and I had an extra seat, and I barely knew you. I said, I like this guy. You want to see Star Wars? Let's see some Star Wars.
That was early on.
Yeah, early on. I think his name's Ryan.
Yeah.
Am I off base then, this whole happy content thing?
No, you know what? And I do what makes me happy, and a lot of that is nature related. A lot of it is I know what makes me happy. I know gardening makes me happy. I know keeping things clean and tidy makes me happy. No, and you know what I do is actually, if I am down about something,
sure,
and there are, you know, lots of stuff happens in life, and you have to try to find that positive. I write 10 positive things about it. If I'm mad about my car, I'm gonna say 10 things I'm grateful or that are positive about my. I'm thankful it gets me to work. I'm thankful it takes me on my adventures. It gives me a place to. If it's raining, you know, you write that out, and I do the same. If Daisy, my partner, if we're fighting, I'll write 10 things that I'm thankful for about Daisy. And
wow,
it is very difficult to be negative while being positive.
That's a life lesson that I don't know. See, it is so funny because, I mean, you know me long enough to know that how grumpy I can be mostly about myself. My friend Tiffany Smith takes me out, sets an index card in front of me and is like, write things good about yourself.
Yeah.
Wouldn't leave the restaurant till I did it. And that was tough. I have a friend, Lisa, who's she'll text me sometimes. Say one nice thing about yourself. I can't answer. I don't believe any of it. So this is a deep life lesson from Handsome, that this is what you do.
It's what I have taken on, and it works. It works for me. I don't know if everybody is built the same way.
Sure. But it's hard to be negative when you're being positive.
It is very difficult. Mm. And when you can look at the positive of what is happening around you, you can't see the negatives as much. They don't affect you because for every negative, you can find, God, there's so many positives. And especially, you know, we live very, very well, very well here.
Yeah.
It's just a
perspective thing, too.
Yeah. Also, I try each night when I'm going to bed, as I'm trying to fall asleep, I think back and I say, what was my favorite part of the day? Mm-hmm. What was the best part of the day? And so you're sitting there and you're like, oh, that was cool. I really liked that meal. You're like, oh, but then that was actually really cool. I really liked that conversation with that person. And all of a sudden you've thought of, 10 moments in your head just as you're quickly going to bed. So you're going to bed positive. Putting your best thoughts as you go to bed. And you're like, wow, that was awesome. I can't believe I got to do that today.
Yeah. That's great stuff. I'm in awe and very have a lot of respect. I kind of had respect for you.
Okay.
But it makes sense. This makes sense because it's not just that you're. I guess the perception of someone like me who's a negative Nelly and depressed and all that kind of stuff is I look someone like you. That's not you're not bounding around with a smile going, hey guys. It's not fake. It's not this and that. It's just in general. It's like Ryan seems to get a lot out of his life. But it also seems that it's a work. It's something you have to work for.
Oh, for sure.
You could probably easily, hanging with JT enough will get you grumpy anyways.
It is, but I like to make him smile. It's to JT's great.
JT is the best. He is absolutely the best and made that job so fun. And then you sounds like you allow yourself to these finding what makes you happy is interesting because it's small things. Gardening's a small thing.
Yeah.
Could be considered, unless you have like a big garden.
I have a huge. Today I'm putting in new garden. Just been working, and when I get a project in my head, oh my God, it takes over my life.
Like folding cables.
You should honestly fold some cables, like roll them up right. You take chaos and you create order. It's easy.
Here's the thing, I went to 2 years of film school, started that path.
Yeah.
And we did have a day where our teacher, Harold Casey Case, took us out to the parking lot at Allen Hancock Community College in Santa Maria, California, and he made us all fold cables.
Yep.
Coil them up.
Over under.
Right?
Better do over under. It'll save your cable, too.
I remember succeeding. Yeah. Yeah, and he was like, this isn't just an OCD thing. Like, you don't want your cables to bend.
Yeah.
And I remember succeeding and thinking, all right, it took me a little bit, but I got it. I can't succeed now. I don't know what happened. I lost the ability. You've seen me try to fold cables. It's like I'm the guy in the corner folding cables, and a guy like you is like, never mind, let me do it.
I believe that moment has actually happened to us. I think you and JT have both tried to help, and it's so nice of you.
It's quaint.
And then you got to throw it back out, redo it. And you could take it all the way to metaphor of life. Yeah,
sure.
if you really want to.
I do not know how to coil up my life.
You can't coil that cable. There's a bumper sticker.
And in finding what makes you happy, one of the things you have definitely discovered is the outdoors. I'm going to say the terms hiking and camping, but I don't even think those really capture what you do. You go deep. You go far into the wilderness.
We do a lot, and I got, you know, camping in the outdoors has been part of my life forever.
Since you got Poison Ike. Poison Ike was the bad president version of Eisenhower in the 50s. The bizarro Eisenhower.
Yeah, so I grew up camping, and it was just always a part of me. And then I kind of left it all when I came down to L.A.
Okay, which would be easy to do.
It's easy to do, and I came down, and I was in school, and I was doing everything I could to make money, and I left it all. And it really wasn't – I would do a couple hikes, but it wasn't until I met Daisy, who's my girlfriend, my partner.
How long have you guys been together now?
We just did 8 years.
Holy moly, and you two young folks – you young whippersnappers.
Not really, but yeah, so just at 8 years. So it's
Your beard looks completely one color. Mine looks multi-grays.
I get one right here.
One center gray. Right? Sorry for you.
Every other week I got to get that again. So
she comes into your life.
She comes into my life, and we both kind of realize that we really enjoy going camping. She's way into it. She's an LA girl. Mm. So the idea of going out and getting out of the city is amazing to her. Mm. And so now, like, and we've gotten worse and worse, or better and better, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Where now it's like almost every weekend, every other weekend. Yeah, we like to go. We love Mammoth. We love Yosemite. We love Kings Canyon. We love Death Valley. We like all that. And then we've try to do a couple road trips a year and get up to Canada, and we went to Alaska and get around. We just like to get out and away from people and put some miles on a trail. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go sit by a quiet stream. I just love getting myself a little sit spot, just a little creek, and I just sit and meditate and just hang out.
Other than the obvious of it's an escape. Do you feel connected to something bigger than yourself there? Is it just, you talk about meditating? Is it just simply a matter of fact of you can see the stars and not hear the cars?
I love how small it makes me. We're so up our own butts in the city and in our own life of how important we are. You get out in nature, you get out there, and you're not important. Mm-hmm. You're destroying the thing better just by being there. Like, that's just what humans do.
Right. We're great.
We're just amazing parasites on this world.
In our American flag pants, destroying the wilderness.
Exactly. So I like getting there, and I like just to watch ants crawl across a stream to see how do they cross in it. How are they doing it? I like the wind. I like sunsets. I don't know. Mm. It just makes me happy.
You're a walking poem. No, I get what you're saying. It is, because look, we go back and forth off air and when I was a junkie. It's like, I do enjoy the outdoors. I do enjoy the nature. I love the sound of a babbling brook and my feet in it and watching a pollywog swimming around. I'm there. It's just I need to go to a Hilton at the end of it.
No, that's the best part. Spending nights in a tent when it's raining or when it's cold, you figure out who you are. You figure out, like, you know, you're just like, you better want to be there.
Sure.
Because otherwise you're going to be miserable.
Right.
And it keeps all those people away.
It keeps the me's away.
It keeps the kins of – no, that's terrible. But accurate. The things that we do will go. I mean, you know, we sleep in the car often. It just makes it so much easier than trying to find. Like now, it's like almost a goal of ours is like, how far can we go and how little can we spend? We'll find the land that's free to camp on. We'll find the whatever we can do to stay away from
reality show about you guys.
Honestly, it's
Handsome and Daisy Go Camping should be a show.
Well, you should see. I started because of, you know, every weekend we would come in to Screen Junkies. You'd be like, "Where'd you go this weekend?" And so then we just
where'd you go find yourself one with nature?
So we decided to start sending you and JT videos.
Yes, and sometimes it wouldn't be while you were gone because you and Daisy were so far into the wilderness, your phone ceased to function.
Right.
So Monday morning, JT and I would driving into work, or he's on the bus and I'm driving in a little bit earlier, and these texts would pop up, and it's you looks like north of the wall in Game of Thrones in the wilderness, snow flurries, and you'd be like, hi, JT and Ken, I'm up here. And, you know, we'll have a fun exchange. I'll text always, where's the gift shop, all right. That stuff. And then Billy Patterson, Billy Business, yeah. gets wind of this and gets jealous.
He got jealous.
And got jealous. Billy, if you're listening, you got jealous you weren't on the chain.
Yeah, so now I got in the beginning of every view, hi, JT, Ken, Billy, and anybody else I got to list off, and then I say something dumb and go away.
But I'm always amazed at the stuff you're sending and where you are. It's gorgeous stuff. Just seems a lot of work and somewhat scary to get there. Because there ain't no lot of times there ain't no trails where you're going.
Yeah, you just kind of go. Sometimes you follow some trails, you do, and then once you get to a trail, you're like, well, that's cool over there. How do we get up there? And you just go. And
really?
And it's, yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, I think let's follow the river.
So it's like you're playing Dragon Age or something.
We call it Pocahontas. we play What's Around the River Bend.
That sounds like a different game.
Yeah. You know, it's once you get out there, you can do whatever you want. No, it is. We play we call it River Bend. Like, all right, let's go around that turn. Going around that turn and see what.
Fascinating.
And you find the coolest places by just going and discovering.
But I'm sure you've had some harrowing experiences. Have you gone too far, gone too high, gone too low?
The closest we got, we were in Alaska this
last. And I'm assuming when you say the closest we got to death.
To death. Yeah, honestly, that is where we were. We were in Alaska in the Kenai Fjords.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a crazy bay of little islands and all sorts of stuff. And we were kayaking, and it's like right where the bay kind of reaches the ocean. And we're just the most amazing. We're watching. There's, bald eagles flying over our heads. You look down in the water. There's jellyfish. There's it's mm-hmm. the most amazing thing. And we come around this turn. We had to come around this island, and this big fog bank was coming in. We're like, oh, cool. Fog's coming in. Yeah. How exciting. Like, we just keep going around, and the waves pick up, and they start crashing over the top of the kayak, and it gets hairy. And Daisy's not the best swimmer, so she's freaking out.
She's not a strong
she
swimmer.
She is straight freaking out, and I'm there. I have to play calm, because I also think we're going to die, but I can't let her know, hey, this is getting out of our...
This is the end.
This is getting a little crazy, and so... For about we couldn't stop paddling for about an hour straight of just save your life paddling to get around this island, and we're starting to get tippy. We're starting to it sucked, and it was rather scary.
And at these moments, at this moment in time, are you thinking, well, at least I'm going to die doing what I loved, or are you like, oh, I've made a huge mistake?
At that point, I was like, okay, we got a little in over our heads here.
Yeah.
No, but we've talked about that also on trips where it's like there's big trees around and things like or bears. We've done a lot of stuff around bears where you have to be very aware. And as you're hiking, you have to whistle and yell and keep bears away from you.
Is that the tactic?
Yeah, you kind of sing to them. You kind of like, hey, bear, and you just, where are you?
Hey, bear, how you doing? Don't eat me.
You whistle. Daisy will sing the same fucking Disney songs over and over. But anyway... But I've told her, and it's like, okay, if I die by a bear,
sure.
Hey, you know what? That's just what it is. I'm in their world. Make sure they don't kill the bear afterwards. Like, I'm in their house. If that tree falls on us while we're asleep, because you know we've heard
trees fall.
They do that. I'm like, don't mourn me.
Don't cry for me.
Don't cry for me, Argentina. No, it's like if I go out like that, you know what? I'm good. If a big sequoia tree fell on me, I always tell her, I'm like, put a bench there.
Yeah.
Put a bench, put a little Ryan quote on there and call it good. Like, I did my thing.
The Ryan quote. Well, I think we've got a lot from this show. Look, I love that attitude. I love that approach. It's fascinating, you know, and it's like, Ryan died doing what he loved, pooping in the forest beneath a tree, running from a bear.
Have you ever pooped in the forest?
No, I have not.
Really?
No, I have not.
Pooping in the forest is an amazing experience.
Okay. How so?
Well, it's
I don't
just
need
like,
those details.
You don't need it too much.
Give me the emotional, spiritual details.
Okay, so say we're out backpacking. We're 10 miles up a trail.
Right.
There's maybe one person on the lake around. So you could go basically anywhere you want. You get to go poo shopping. You're like, okay, there's a log over there. That looks good. I can rest on that.
By the way, that's your quote on the bench. You get to go poo shopping.
That's my bench quote.
Ryan Elliott.
Now you just
died
pick
here.
It, lean against a rock, do a thing, do a squat, whatever you gotta do. It's so freeing, and you realize, God, I'm just a damn coyote out here. I'm just another one of the animals shitting in the woods.
A cog in the wheel.
It puts you in perspective, you and your porcelain throne. Who do you think you are?
You know what? Maybe I give it a go. Maybe one time I just...
There's no chance. You're never pooping in the woods. Come on, kid.
That's my fear where you're going. My friend Tom Connolly, who walked across America a couple years ago for charity, did a six-month walk across America and has also, had a couple times in the Sierra Nevadas where he didn't think he was coming out. And he'll talk to me and some of my comedian friends, like, you guys got to go with me. And I'm like, Tom, the first thing I'm asking is, where am I blow drying my hair and dropping a deuce? Like, I can't comprehend that. But I can't get around it. And here you are leaning up against rocks with a smile on your head, in your face.
If that is your biggest worry is, where am I going to take a deuce? The answer is anywhere you want. Take that. That is no longer a question. There's
no limitations
to this.
There's
no limitations. Just bury it and keep on going.
That's fat. Oh my gosh. See, we go from quiet camera guy to wild, free wilderness pooper. This is why I love doing the Knapsack Files. I get these wonderful stories. I feel if I do say so myself, I don't say positive things about myself often, I'm able to find some of these interesting stories. And here you are nearly dying in Alaska, whistling bears away. What's the closest you've ever come to a bear?
Oh,
not counting like the San Diego Zoo.
No, we've seen a lot of bears. Mm-hmm. Bears, especially when we were in Canada, they're everywhere. Actually had to be in a campground surrounded by high voltage power line, fence. Like, it looked like we were going into Jurassic Park.
Right.
And we're like, oh, this is awesome. And it's like, well, do I feel worse that they actually have to put the electric fence up? Or
because at some point you're gonna have to leave that camp, right?
Yeah, you have to drive. It was pretty crazy. That's Canada's very real wilderness.
So there's
bears everywhere, and you just have to think. You have to think bear. You have to just keep everything in your bear bin. You have to keep everything
away. What's in your bear bin? Food?
Food, all the stuff. So it's like when you're backpacking, especially in a lot of places in California, mm-hmm. a lot of places that have bears, you have to have a big canister.
Right.
That is like impossible for a bear to get into, and you have to keep anything with a smell. So this could be your chapstick. Mm. This could be your toothpaste. It could be... Mm-hmm. Basically everything.
Anything.
It's kind of a pain in the ass, but
sure.
At least gives you a seat.
But it saves your life.
Yeah. It does your thing. And you got to just take it and you have to walk it out from your camp and you put it under a tree and you might come back and it's been banged around a bit and you, didn't get it.
Right. I mean, I'm serious when I've done some camping.
Yeah.
Church group stuff too. But it's not yours kind of camping. I play in my friend's backyard, which was a lot of acreage. And so there's a part of it, but there's always a safety net. So you can see where the upbringings are different as you're getting poison. I almost said it again, poison ike. Poison oak. And you're like brushing it off. And I'm like, I don't want to get poison oak. So I can see where the difference is. But I'm serious when I say I want to go with you and Daisy once on a little short day trip.
I've got
a day trip, but maybe a one-nighter. You know what I mean?
Oh, easy. We do those all the time. Yeah. Right now, Wildflowers is where you need to go.
I love Wildflowers. Great album by Tom Petty, 1990.
Yeah, Wildflowers. Or there's places all over L.A. There's honestly, L.A. is so close to amazing places. If you're willing to do, I mean, we do, 5 to 8 hour perimeter usually on weekends. We kind of keep it there, but like we could do an hour away.
Yeah.
You've never been to even Joshua Tree?
I've never been to Joshua Tree.
It's kind of douchey nowadays.
But it's also a great album by you two, so I know that too. Yeah, no, I've never even done that.
No?
Man, I've never even been to Palm Springs to a hotel out that way.
I don't know about that. I've never done that either.
Yeah.
Golf course.
I mean, because I enjoy a good hike, and I know that's not what you're doing. That's part of it, but not it. So, yeah, I'm saying the city boy gets it, because I love going to nature. I do love it.
Yeah.
I love watching Return of the Jedi. All right. I love it. But there is a certain, I don't know what it is, man, because my mother was not like, my dad would do that. He would go out with his friends, and he told the story of a bear ruffling up against their tent and everything. And I think as a kid, when I heard that, I was like, I ain't doing that.
But you would get a story. Life is about collecting stories, and that's a story. He's got it.
That might be a better quote for your bench.
Life's About Collecting Stories.
Yeah, then and Shopping.
Yeah, I like
pooping.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's write that one down.
Okay.
That one's
yeah.
nice.
Yeah, but it's I you know, we used to go to Yosemite every year.
Yeah.
Again, did, talk about nature.
Did that last weekend.
I know. I haven't been since 1994.
Wow.
But we used to go almost every other year, or at the same time during every Thanksgiving, we drive from Pismo Beach, but down here to the San Bernardino Mountains, where I'd stay in Green Valley Lake above Big Bear, every up there. So again, love nature.
Yeah.
Love the cold. Love the snow. Need that bed. You're gonna. That's where you're gonna have to break me.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We could do, like, we call that chill camping, where you bring all your fancy stuff. We'll bring an air mattress.
Chill camping.
We've got some good blankets.
I might be a chill camper.
You're a chill camper. And those are, yeah. there's perfectly, I love chill camping, honestly. Just sitting in a hammock, just sketching with a beer. Come on. That's life.
That's life. That's great. All right. So I don't know when or how, because I'm a busy city boy, but I will publicly commit to this.
Wow. He's doing it.
And, you know, maybe it's not just us three. Maybe we convince JT to go with us and we make it a fun video.
He said that, but he honestly would bring his Xbox.
He'll
or
bring
PlayStation.
His PS4.
Oh my God, that guy.
Where do I plug in my Xbox here at the campsite? but I think I'll publicly commit to at some point soon, next year, doing that with you.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's so easy. Honestly, we'll bring you along. It's going to be easy. You're going to love it, and then you're going to come back and be like, listen, Knapsack file fiends, this is what it's about. And you're going to come back and say what your bench quote will be.
Yeah. My bench quote will be, the pooping wasn't so bad.
It's like, it was all right. Just give it an all right.
I love it. Ryan Elliott, handsome, a.k.a. handsome. You are a very fascinating and well-rounded man, and I think a lot of people listening might have actually got some life lessons from you today, whether you thought so coming in or not.
Well, if they did, fantastic. If not, well, we found out Ken's afraid to poop in the woods.
That's right. We learned something big today.
Something for everyone.
So now I know where the listeners of the Knapsack Files can follow me and Ken Knapsack on Twitter. Use the hashtag the Knapsack Files, like my official Facebook page, all that wonderful stuff. We are got a Patreon page. You can support there if you'd like, where you're going to get 5 extra minutes with Ryan if you support over there at a certain level or above. But Ryan, because I don't even really think I know, even though I'm pretty sure I follow you. Where can they find you on Twitter?
I believe it's at Corey Matthews. So
I'm going to look right now. Now that I know that is your Instagram page.
I think it's the same. Corey Matthews on Instagram.
With two R's?
CoreyMatthews.
Now, why did you go with a complete, you know, secret name there?
So Corey Matthews, as you know, is a character off of Boy Meets World.
I don't know that.
You didn't know that? Anyways, Corey Matthews is the main character off Boy Meets World.
Right.
And I don't know, back when junior high, when you had to come up with my first Xbox gamer tag,
right.
I just started using Corey Matthews because I thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And now I've just used it for everything online. If I don't know, it's just,
what is it? C-O-O?
CoreyMatthews.
Okay, well,
maybe. I don't know.
Well, but I don't know if that's this is fascinating to me. There's a Corey Matthews and a Corey Matthews 2, and I don't know if it's you.
On Twitter?
On Twitter.
I don't know. The only thing I've ever done, I tweeted once about Big Little Lies because it blew my mind.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's not showing up. All right, we'll find that. But I know for a fact. I know for a fact. I love this. I love this kind of stuff. I know for a fact on Instagram.
Most people come on, they have all this stuff lined
up.
Yeah, I've seen so many people, like, they're like, they just rattle it off like this on this and this. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, you can
but
find me in the garden.
On Instagram, you will find Ryan Elliott. That is with two L's and two T's. But Corey, CoreyMatthews, no space, Matthews.
Yeah.
Okay, there it is.
That's me.
There it is, followed by Joe Starr and Billy Patterson.
Ooh, big names.
Got some great stuff. And you can. I'm looking at it now. You got some of these wilderness photos. Pretty fancy stuff here.
Yeah, Daisy posts most of them, though.
All
so
right.
Like, it's...
You're going to get some followers, and then we'll find out on Twitter where they can find you as well. that is amazing. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on into the Knapsack Files. So for Ryan, for me, and for all the bears in the wilderness, we'll see you next time. Bye.